Hello and welcome to the Julian Gino Podcast. On this episode, we are going to be discussing incredible abundance. We're going to be discussing an incredible family. On today's show, we have Mark Tim. He's a best-selling author of Mentor to Millions, serial entrepreneur who has launched and sold multiple companies across diverse industries worldwide. Today, he invests, advises, and serves on boards of public companies, leveraging decades of experience. His greatest mission is mentoring his children and expanding God's kingdom. And Mary Tim, she's an entrepreneur, mentor, and systems thinker with an MBA and a background in psychology and sociology. She's dedicated to empowering families and young adults through purpose-driven solutions, blending heart, strategy, and leadership to help others overcome barriers, launch ideas, and reach their potential. Welcome to the show, Mark and Mary. How you guys doing?
We're doing great. Thank you for having us.
You know, when I got on the podcast and I started talking to your daughter, I have to honestly say, it sounded as if I was talking to like a 50-year-old in wisdom. And I was like, wow, this is going to be an awesome show because I didn't know what I really wanted to focus on. I love spending a few minutes before we hit the record button to get to know you guys, but I'm so impressed at having that conversation with your daughter. And I want to jump into the pain part first, because I heard Mary say there was a struggle between 13 and 18, because it's all sunshine and rainbows and all. Mary, in your words, what was the struggle?
Really jumping into it.
I want to jump into it.
His husband does.
Well, ready to go.
Because once you hear how wonderful the story is, you're like, wow, if you're struggling out there and you say, well, my kids are driving me nuts, there's no light at the
connection,
tunnel.
Connection.
There's absolutely light at the end of the tunnel. There's hardship. Not everything could be easy. So I'd love to hear your take on what the struggle was all about.
I'd love to. And you know, it's fitting because being a background in psych and sociology, comparative to my father, I tend to go deep fast. I love it. It's my style.
Perfect.
I said to him actually on a plane together Saturday, I wish we told more of the hard parts of our story. So thank you for giving us that opportunity.
She specifically said she wished I told more of the hard story.
So that is going to get good. No, I think there are several elements to it. One being, and I'm sure millions of people can understand this with the divorce rate that we have in this country, but there's a lot of hardships to having a blended family. And we were not excluded from that. There were certainly hardships to having a blended family, conflicts between siblings, dynamics of who parents who and how. There were just a lot of struggles wrapped up in that. And I think the more that I become an adult, you know, it used to be when you're 15, you look at 25-year-olds and you're like, they must have it all figured out. And now I'm 24 and I'm like, I don't know anything. Mm-hmm. And I think at every level you're getting to that. And so now as an adult, I have incredible compassion for the waters my father was navigating. That, like, for anybody out there with a blended family, that's tough, especially when I went through the track of originally, before shifting into the business world with my father, I was down the track of becoming a couples therapist. And I was only a few months away from that. And one of the things that they talk about is how difficult it is navigating that at whatever age you are, navigating a blended family. So there were a lot of conflicts there. And then also just being a teenager sucks. It's sucks for both parties. It's hard on the parent. Mm-hmm. I was awful. I have no problem admitting that. But also, I was filled with such intensity of emotion. My brain is changing. My body's changing. I'm afraid of everything that's out there that I don't understand. I'm angry about everything that I don't understand. You're flushed with all of these emotions, and yet you only have so many of the answers to understand it. And for today's teenagers, and I was the very first generation to experience this based on when I grew up, there's so much information coming at you. Mm-hmm. I have dad's information. I have school's information, but I also have the internet's information. Mm-hmm. The answers to all of my questions are at my fingertips, and I don't know who to trust. Mm-hmm. I could do a whole. Mm-hmm. So just on the emotions you experience as a teenager and why that's tough. And I think it genuinely took us until I was 18 years old to navigate it. And I'm sure he looks back and goes, man, we could have had that ship tied up in 6 months if I knew all this now, but that's not how life works. So there were some incredibly tough times. When I was 18 years old, I had gotten a full ride to college, and my mindset was, I'm going to get out of here, get as independent as I can possibly get, and come home as little as possible. I have no problem admitting that. And then a pandemic happened and I was trapped at home. Kudos to him for saying, I know where I've messed up. I've been reflecting. Two are now out of the house. I only have one left in the house. I'm now realizing all the ways in which I've messed up. I now have them trapped as the world is falling apart around them. I'm going to take massive advantage of that time. And he truly just poured in, met us exactly where we were, met my anger exactly where it was, frustration. We had hard, hard talks. And now there's no one I am more close to. Mm. Truly, not only have we rebuilt our relationship, but he made my sister and I's lives difficult because the bar is way up here. And it's hard to find people who meet it.
So this is going to be called the Gino and Mary podcast because we're going to go deeper and deeper. And I think Mark and Julie are going to be sitting here going, okay, because I want to dive deep into Mark. As Mark is sitting there going, wow, I've got a daughter who thinks she knows it all. She's really great. I loved her when she was 10 years old. Now I can't control this little monster. But at the same time, like, I'm trying to make money here. This pandemic is shutting everything down. I've got older kids. I've got responsibilities. Mark, how did you navigate this? And how did you have that epiphany of like, yeah, I am at fault at this as well. She's not the only one.
Well, what I would say is this. Sometimes things happen that you have no control over. And the pandemic, I had no control over. And it definitely impacted my ability to make money and my ability to pursue some of the ambitions that I had. And it was the bucket of water on top of me that says, hey, look, you're not in control. Like, there's so much more. And what could I control? Not the pandemic, not where I was at work-wise. I could control the relationship that I had with my kids. And I did something, and she touched on it, but I'm going to go a little deeper. And that is, I got vulnerable, which is really hard for dudes to do. Much easier for women. Okay. Mm-hmm. Much easier for you guys. Not easy for us. And so I got super vulnerable and started owning the mistakes that I made as a father. And at that time, I literally felt emotionally naked. I felt so vulnerable and I felt weak. Now, you can appreciate that as a guy. I felt weak. I felt really weak because I felt like I was supposed to have it all together while they were growing up and be the sage from the stage and be this wise guy and all the answers. And I realized at that moment, I didn't have the answers. And I'd made mistakes, and it was my chance to clean the slate and own it.
And you had never looked more strong to us.
That's the thing I didn't count on. That's the thing I didn't even see coming. My vulnerability at that time was weak in the mirror to me and was incredibly strength and strong to them. I'm like, never had anyone ever told me that being completely vulnerable takes more courage, takes more confidence than faking a life and a wisdom that isn't true. And so vulnerability is one of the biggest things that we need to do as dads, and we need to do as husbands, as parents, is be incredibly vulnerable to our kids and say, we don't have it all figured out. And in fact, I screwed this, and this up with you. And I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry I messed that up. Will you forgive me? And will you give me a chance to make it right? And if I can hold back the tears right now, because when they give you the chance to make it right, when they're 18, it means they're inviting you to be their dad for the rest of your life. So this whole teenage thing, it's just a big test. They know when they're little babies that if you don't take care of them, you'll get arrested. Like, you'll go to jail. And somewhere along the line, when they become teenagers, they figure that out and say, you had to love me or you would go to jail.
And because they're exploding with emotion, you are the only safe person to explode because you unconditionally love them. So it's not, they're not screaming at you because they don't love you, screaming at you because they're afraid no one else will love them.
But we don't get that as parents. We think they're just screaming because they're being obnoxious teenagers. And when you figure out it's a test, and here's what the test is. You loved me when I was a cute baby. You loved me when I was an adorable toddler. You loved me when I, you know, wanted to hold your hand every day until I was 10 years old. Will you love me when I'm an ugly teenager? Will you love me when I'm at my absolute worst? You pass that test, you got the Holy Grail for the rest of your life. You don't pass that test and you're on the outside looking in for the rest of your life.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I agree. And I was just talking to someone today about the father as the protector. And a lot of men, I think, have this in their head. Protector has to be strong, but you have a list of things that you're supposed to do, and being real and apologizing and being emotional is not part of it, because that was just the way you grew up. And that's just the way a lot of the guys grew up, and they don't know that part of, and they're afraid because they feel weak. And so therefore they avoid it for their whole fatherhood, let's say. But that's what, like, just Mary, you hit it. That's what most girls are waiting for. Like, we want that.
You know, one of the things I talked about with my brother, because my brother and I will have conversations about modern masculinity. To your point, Julia, one of the things we'll talk about is providing and protecting can mean something different today.
Yes.
The biggest things that my dad did for me in that moment where he was vulnerable is he provided a safe place to be broken.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And so now one of the things he'll often talk about is he's our first phone call. That's true. If I have messed up, it's not my friends. It's not the internet. It's mm-hmm. my boyfriend. My father is my first phone call because he established through showing me, mm-hmm. okay, that he's the first person I can be broken to. Mm-hmm.
And in all fairness, I wasn't that person.
Right.
Her whole childhood.
Well, that's what we talk about many times is if you don't establish that relationship with your children, they will go somewhere else if they have trouble, 100%. And a lot of times us as parents are blind to it because of course they're going to come and tell us. And most of the time it's a no because they're afraid to tell you. And that's usually because of our reaction to their previous comments or whatever they did. And that's something to reflect on too. And so how long did it take for you, Mary, to, I guess, retrust your dad in a sense where, okay, I can go to you with a problem and I know you're going to react in a, you know, reasonably to the point where I'm comfortable.
Wasn't short, Julia. Talk about he loves the equation, behavior over time equals trust. And so I remember the very first few times that he created that space, that he provided that safety for me, I didn't trust it at all. And in fact, in a lot of ways, I tested it, like that teenager that tests things, because it didn't feel safe and I didn't know what to do with it. But he consistently showed up. And so consistency is that piece. And honestly, I don't know if I could really tell you if it was months or if it was an entire year. He would show me he wasn't afraid to admit where he'd messed up. And that when I shared my own mistakes, that he wasn't gonna, you know, because I'm 18 now. Like, at the end of the day, I can make these choices, but I'm no longer in his house. And so he would meet it with, what did we learn from this? How are you going to fix this? I'm on the outside. I'm going to guide you. But ultimately, this is yours to tackle. So like, if I flip out or if I yell, what is that going to solve? You got to handle this. So let's talk it through. Mm-hmm. And when that dynamic changed, I would say over time, and each of us were different. I think our older brother, you spoke earlier to like the kids get a different parent. Our youngest sister trusted it first because she kind of got wise dad before even leaving. He was starting to change. I trusted it second. And my brother Marcus was like the last one to be like, seriously? But it's there now. Now it's all three of us. We have full trust that there's no one we want to talk about something with when stuff goes awry than our father.
Yeah. No, before we started recording, I was sharing with them the different versions of my kids. Our kids got different versions of us.
Awesome.
He's always been the best, calm, collective, very loving, very wise. But it's just a reality. And I think that's part of the process. And I always, you know, we're really hard on ourselves as parents. We try to do the right thing. We don't know what that is at the time. We learn and then we regret from the past. But I really do just to have compassion for yourself a little bit because we didn't know at the time to be a certain way as parents. I mean, we even look back to our teenage years. We're like, oh, we were awful like to our parents. But just have a little compassion for yourself. Like that's what you knew at the time and how thankful we are that we've learned what we learned. And God took us on this journey of, you know, we're not capable of loving somebody as well as they deserve. And I think that's something we can't love perfectly. And I think that's really something to remember. Our children, no matter what we do, they deserve more. And we can't give that to them. God can give that to them, but we can't. And so just to be a little bit patient and a little bit compassionate with yourself is very important.
Of course. And that's why I think it's so important to have these conversations. Because
yes.
From the kids' perspective, we don't know.
Right.
Like I had no idea what monetary struggles my father was having during that pandemic. I have no idea what's going on in his world.
Right.
I will very soon.
I think there's a struggle with parents. It's like, do we tell our kids? Do we burden them with our struggles? Do we tell them how hard it is? Because you don't want to bring them into those conversations. We don't know what age, we don't know when they're capable of. And that's what I mean is sometimes one child would be fine talking about the money issues and the other child would be so devastated and guilty for go buying pajamas that they wanted. That was the story.
Mary brought up the trust equation. I just want to break that down.
Yeah.
for anybody that's listening. So behavior divided by time equals trust. And that's an easy thing to write down and look at. But what it really means is that the only piece of that equation that we get to control is behavior. The time factor is 100% on the other person. They may need you to be consistent in your behavior for a week or a month or a year or many years. You have to be consistent in the behavior. They decide how much time is needed, and only then does it equal trust. And that's been the hard part, and something I had to learn is that each child, each person, each relationship has a different time component because that's their choice. That's their variable in that equation. And so Mary's right. I had to be consistent for a long time, and I need to still be consistent to maintain that control. But the only piece I get to control is behavior.
The podcast has been a little too heavy for me.
I know.
Let's talk about another happy topic like money.
Jumping right off the bat. Yeah.
I love talking business and real estate and money. And she talks about this touchy feely stuff. And I'm like, okay, we can go there. But that's the stuff that's really important. I know. Listen, Mark, you said you had a website for people to go to and get some resources. You want to share that with me?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So go to ceodad.org. ceodad.org. What's there is obviously the audio version of the first book that I wrote, Mentor to Million. And then there's a bunch of resources for family. One of the things that we were big on is family meetings. You talk about getting out there and actually talking to your family about real hard issues. Sitting down, very few families sit down intentionally and say, why were we made a family? Like, what's our purpose on this planet? Because I can tell you, it wasn't to be alone. And it wasn't just to be your own family. You were intended to impact others. So what's that look like? How would you go about doing that? And so that was one of the most powerful things that we did. So there's a family meeting guide, even for young people. And then the big thing is I'm the first generation with technology. Mm-hmm. So I didn't have a cell phone until I was 27. But my kids grew up with a cell phone. So we did some contracts to have technology. And so there's some resources in there. So any resources that we have is available. And any future books that we write, it's a good place to be on the list to be able to get a hold of that.
So what I'm hearing is running a family is very similar to running a business. You need to have a cadence of accountability, core values, mission statement, talking about money. How did you mentor your kids as far as money? Because Mary seems as if she loved the whole idea of value creation and becoming an entrepreneur. How did that look in the household?
Yeah, so it looked like this. I was good in business and not as good at home. Business became so instinctive, but yet I would crush it in business and come home and get crushed. And so you can go on the Indiana corporation search and find a corporation called 2B Tims LLC. I incorporated my family. Our family is a legal LLC entity. And I started to parent from the perspective of an LLC mindset because that all made sense to me. Everything else was confusing. And so the way the kids learned about money was learning about business through my eyes. And I had this mindset. This is when Mary talks about me pivoting and starting to get it right, was I looked at business and said, what if everything I do in business is the warm-up lap and the real race is at home? So everything I learned about logos and mission statements and everything I learned at every conference and every mastermind I went to, what if that was practice so that I could really put it into performance at home? And I started talking to them about business, things that made sense to me, and about shareholders. All of a sudden, Mary got a voice and a vote. Yeah. Like, it wasn't just a kid. And she owns the same amount of shares of 2B Tims that I do, right? So she's an equal shareholder in the family business as a family. And mm-hmm. So that's how I chose to teach them about money, was through the perspective of the business infrastructure, because that's what I understood. The vernacular made sense to me. The structure made sense to me, and I started to talk to them in that way. Now, that may not make sense to everybody because they may not be entrepreneurs and have set up multiple companies and sold companies, but I looked at our family as having a net worth and a bottom line value. It may not have been monetarily, it may have been the impact that they had in the community, and it may have been the growth that they had as people and as persons and their ability to impact the world, but it still was a bottom line. And it still was a net worth, and everything made sense in that way. And I think they caught it through a concept that I'm going to call contagious proximity. And COVID taught us that people are contagious within how many feet? 6 feet. Okay. I'm going to tell you right now, that that's where the best stuff is caught in your family is within 6 feet. Meaning if they're within 6 feet of you, watching you, emulating you, seeing how you treat others, seeing what you say to others, that's contagious proximity. And they caught it in contagious proximity. And I'm going to embarrass Mary because things come out of her mouth. And I'm like, where did you get that? I'm sitting at my desk right now. So Mary and I are at my desk. There's this space under my desk. It's about 3 feet by 3 feet. One of Mary's favorite places to be as a child was underneath my desk while I was meeting with my vice presidents, my managers, my shipping managers, my sales manager, and she was down there playing with her littlest pet shops. Me thinking that she's just down there playing, being in proximity to dad, but she's a sponge. Mm-hmm. Listen,
and they're having a meeting.
I see these things coming out of her, and all of a sudden I'm like, oh my gosh, so much was caught, not taught. Mm. Contagious proximity. And I would say the best thing I ever did as an entrepreneurial parent was for a period of about 10 years, I never went to a single meeting, a single conference without one of my kids with me. Mm. And the contagious proximity that happened at Marriott's, on Delta Airlines, in Uber cars, with them sitting by me while real money was being talked about, where real business was being talked about. That's why my son owns 14 properties. That's why my daughter has an MBA and has her whole, you know, entrepreneurial journey. That's why my other daughter, her sister, is going to med school. That stuff happened in Ubers and Marriott's and on the airline, traveling with me, doing business in contagious proximity. Mm-hmm. You know, that's how it
is. Can I add to it though? Mm-hmm. For those that aren't entrepreneurial, there were things that you did that were very different. Gino and I got to kind of talk about this as you were in the bathroom. So I would actually say the biggest ways in which you taught us about money, there's high level ways that have absolutely set us ahead and allowed us to be where you just discussed that we are. But the small ways that simply just prepared us for life in terms of talking about money, you established a system within our home to where we naturally had to learn about it. And you've mentioned dinner table, that system, it's nearly the same system, just without marbles as dad used, because now we have fancy apps and things, which is nice. But in our household, you had expectations. So you had things that you simply had to do because you were a Tim. And that was different for everybody. I had a pet, my expectation, clean your room, make your bed, brush your teeth. That looks different for every family, but you know, we had expectations in ours. We also all had a room we were responsible for. And to this day, 24 years old, I have the cleanest bathroom of anyone I know because my expectation was the bathrooms. And nobody does dishes like my sister who had the kitchen. So I suggest rotating them now looking back. But we had expectations. And then we had opportunities to earn extra money. And all of those opportunities were things that earned us a capability. So there are all of these things around the house that mom and dad are doing that mom and dad, A, don't necessarily have to be doing because your kids are always far more capable than you think they are. And B, would teach your kid a capability they already need to leave the house. And there's a myriad of things. Organizing the garage, changing the oil in the car. Like, I could go on and on and on and on. Cleaning the dryer vent. Like, you know, whatever it is, especially if you're a household with teenagers, there are all of these different things that your kid needs that capability to one day feel mm-hmm. ready when they launch into the world. That's an opportunity to earn extra money. And then also he made sure that we had expenses. And I hated him for it at the time. And my friends thought he was crazy as a dad. But when I was 13 years old, which would have made my sister 10, we did all the systems at the same time. She then had expenses. I had expenses that we had to cover. And so I had a motivation to earn extra money and to meet my expectations. And that modeled the outside world. Mm. I go to the outside world. I'm in college. I have a roommate. And my roommate genuinely believes the entirety of her paycheck is hers to spend because that's how it works. If you have a household where you're giving your kids allowance and then that allowance is used to buy whatever they want, if I'm given $10, I have $10. I knew from very young age, I have $10, I actually have $7 because X has got to go to savings, so much has got to go to charity. Like that system mm-hmm. beat into my head. So now I'm out there, I naturally know that I have expenses. I naturally know that my money needs to be split. And so it's not a shocker to graduate college, get my first apartment, and have to explore the internet for financial advice to try to learn that. Those systems were put in place young. And I don't think you have to be an entrepreneur to do that. I think any household can establish those pieces. And then also, now I'm an accountability buddy of, hey, Dad, I thought that our family was focused on X. And now it's a whole family conversation for the LLC.
So this is interesting because I told you both that we were getting into money coaching. And the great thing about what I love about coaching about money, it's not the money itself. It's the patterns that we adopt from our family. And I love this show specifically because if you come from a family that didn't have great patterns, my parents were great. They parented differently than me. I started on that path. Thankfully, married my wife. We deviated off that path. You know, certain patterns on money that I developed from them about scarcity of money and the way you use money. So if you're listening to this and you don't have this and you haven't had great role models, it's not, I don't want to say it's not hard, but the information's out there. Yeah. Go out and find role models. Go out and find families that are doing what you aspire to do. And it's so subconscious or unconscious that these patterns, they creep into us. And then all of a sudden, 20 years later, you look back and go, why did I do all this? You have the ability now with all this information, this knowledge out there, to choose to see what a healthy family looks like, or at least what a healthy family looks like to you, and go out and find out what those families do. And what you lay down is something very simple. It's something that, you know, you're hanging out with the family. You're setting the expectations. You're not doing financial calculations there. It's just really basic, simple stuff that you can explain to the kids. And as they get older, my three older kids right now, we have calls with our accountants every quarter. They've got this. So I am the leader and I'm there to teach them certain stuff. But I love what you said, just laying the groundwork early on and keeping it simple, not overwhelming them. Mm-hmm. You know, for me, the legacy piece, if we could wrap up with the legacy piece, Mark, because I think it's important for you, for what you're working towards. You seem as if you've worked with tons of people. You know, you said you crushed the business, you came home, you didn't crush the household, you made that shift now. If somebody's sitting out there and going, I've got a lot of this stuff figured out, but how do I figure out what my legacy looks like? It's not just giving money away, right? It sounds as if there's more components to it. What does the legacy look like to you and your family?
Yeah. So it's interesting because prior to getting on this podcast, Mary's older brother was sitting right in front of me and the entire conversation pivoted to legacy and shared with him, you know, one of the things that I have been called to do is I'm the executor of most of the estates in my entire family network, my grandparents, my parents, my aunts, my uncles. And I said, son, you need to start, like, we need to start having these conversations because I said, this is headed your way. And he said, what do you mean it's headed my way? And I said, it's headed your way. I said, you're the oldest and you've done well as an entrepreneur. And I said, you're going to have to step up. And right now is the time to learn. And, you know, and so from a legacy standpoint, it's not just about trusts and wills and all of that kind of family dynamics. For me, it's more about instilling the accountability of what it means to be a family. And I'll give you an example of that. There's something that happens in our family and it happens every Sunday night. Last night was Sunday night. And so my parents, over 10 years ago, started having this Sunday meal and they invited their kids, their grandkids to the Sunday meal. And sometimes it would be very small attendance and sometimes it'd be bigger, et cetera. But they did it consistently for a long time. And so now on Sunday nights, my parents and all their friends look at them and go, how do we do this? Because their friends are all scrambling to try to have a relationship with their grandkids. And every Sunday night, my parents simply cook an amazing meal and all of their grandkids show up. Mm-hmm. They show up and it gets even better. They now show up with girlfriends and boyfriends and fiancés. And now girlfriends, sisters or brothers show up and they're all showing up on this Sunday night. So legacy-wise, it is to make sure that the things that matter most that inspire connectivity and relationships in my family are continued. You think I'm not going to grab Sunday nights if something happens to my parents? Like, I'm going to grab it so fast that nobody will even know that there was a hiccup other than grandma and grandpa aren't there. That's going to continue forever because what they did is something their friends simply can't achieve unless they're willing to commit a decade to achieve. So for me, it is figuring out what matters most in our family, relationship wise and communication wise, and even financial, if that's a piece of it, and continuing it. learning from the mistakes we made and then building on the things we did right, passing that on to the next generation so that my son is in a position or my daughter's in a position mm-hmm. where they can pass that on to their children. Because I said it, I don't know if I said it before it started or now, but I'll say it again. My bucket list is pretty checked off. I'm very fortunate at my age. I've been blessed very much financially and also just experience-wise where I just don't have anything left on my bucket list. But here's what I do have. I would like for my children to have audacious, insane, incredible bucket lists. I just want to be on the front row. Just let me have a seat on the front row. Let me help them check off their bucket list. Let me be a part of them, you know, going through life in marriage and life in parenting and life in relationships. And so to me, that's legacy. Legacy is when you get to be the dad for your entire life and know that your kids are set up to be the kind of parent that's going to have the same kind of relationship that's 10,000 feet deep in terms of the oil that's being produced, and it will continue to produce generations past. The conversation I was having with my son is about a trust that I set up that is set up to last 150 years. And he's now thinking about the fact that it will be his great-grandchildren that are still benefiting from that trust, and him understanding why it was set up and respecting it and knowing that he's going to play a vital role in keeping that going in a family legacy. Passing that wisdom on is key, but you don't, Gino, you don't get to pass it on if you don't pass the trust equation. So many parents try to skip that and assume that they have the credibility and they have the respect of the people that matter most because they skip the trust equation, which is their behavior has to be consistent over the amount of time that those they want to influence most accept so that they trust them. Then you've got real legacy that lives way past, many generations past your time on this earth.
I love that. And all everything you're saying, you mentioned business, both of you guys mentioned business and all the work people put behind it. It's something to remember is that to have a connected family takes a lot of work. It takes work ethic, it's never giving up, trying things differently. What's working for one kid's not working for other. And I think that's something that a lot of us get discouraged because we've given up many times, as you know, especially with some really difficult toddlers in our family. And so we're like, we have to find something new. And I just encourage everyone, if it's not working, find something different. Don't ever give up on your children, on your family life, on your marriage, because I think too many times we do. And then we put all our work into business and trying to make money and we focus over there because home is too difficult. And I just encourage, I love the fact that you guys worked at it. And you are continuing to work at it. You always will work at it. And even the family meals on Sunday, as a mom of a lot of kids, that's a lot of work. That's a lot of dishes. That's a lot of cooking. But is it worth it in the end?
It starts on Friday for evening.
Exactly.
It is a massive endeavor. If you go to Mary and I's Instagrams, my Instagram is my mentor, Mark. Mary's Instagram is my mentor, Mary. I just want to piggyback on what you just said. If you're struggling and you're not sure if you're getting it right, mentors are out there. There are more people willing to mentor. There are people willing to raise their hand and say, I need help. And so don't be afraid to raise your hand and say, I'm not getting this right. Mm-hmm. Out there can help me sort this out. And so we are huge believers in mentorship.
And something that brings families together is food. Always food. Oh, and I even have it. My daughter made me a cup. It's from a Bible quote, which is one of my favorite. And it says, come have breakfast. Jesus's words. Okay. And it's John 21:12. I think that's what it says. I can't see it. But my point is, it's all, there's something when you have a meal and you share a meal at a table. And that's one of the things my husband always, we always talked about. So you're saying, well, food, yeah, okay. Secretly, probably. I mean, come on. But food brings people together and food, there's something about it. You make a meal and it's just, it's the best gift you can bring to somebody.
It's food, but it's also welcoming. It's also
but it's the whole atmosphere. Itself. The exactly. Sunday nights that you're talking about, Mark, are so, there. Those is that's the legacy that people are going to remember. And I think that's the money is important to, you know, buy the food, right, and all of that. But it's the legacy of sitting together as a family and sharing a meal and having a conversation. That's the true legacy that I obviously want to live. You can take care of the money, but we'll go there next time.
The CEODad.org. So CEODad.org, bunch of good stuff in there. Go, you know, get everything and learn everything that you can. You can find Mary and I, my mentor Mary and my mentor Mark. And so we've got another book in the works called, well, the working title is Made to Mentor, because we believe everybody should have mentors for the rest of their life, and everybody should be mentored for the rest of their life. And I think we're supposed to do that. So feel free to grab any of these ideas, especially the Sunday night meal. If you're out there as a parent or a grandparent and you're willing to commit to a long time of consistency, behavior over time equals trust, it's the coolest thing ever. Sunday nights with your grandparents and those that you invite in, the what we hear from the boyfriends, girlfriends, fiancés, you know, family members, like, it is the coolest thing ever. And so invite you to do that.
I love that.
This has been a great podcast. You don't want to know why, Joel?
Why?
Because after listening to this, you've got Mark, his stories of screw-ups. Everyone knows how much I've screwed up as a dad, right? There's hope. It's hopeful, right? I mean, if these two guys can figure it out, anybody can figure it out.
I do agree with you.
I'm serious.
I mean, I lived with you for a long time, exactly. So I do know.
It's okay. Life is all about making mistakes. We don't really know it. Yeah. And I think the thing that's really hard for me is really the authenticity. Yeah. Not the authenticity, the vulnerability piece of it. And if you're out there and you're struggling as a dad, maybe go find a men's group. Maybe find, go out and talk to other men.
Yeah.
And it could be challenging. But I'm going to leave my last thing is, yes, if Mark and Gino can do it, then anybody can do it, right?
I tell people ask me all the time, you know, about, oh, I met your son or daughter and oh, they're so wonderful. I go, look, let's get something straight. I got it wrong far longer than I got it right.
Right.
I just happened to get it right at the right time. And the best time to plant a tree was 20 years ago. This time is today. Just start getting it right today and be consistent. That's all.
Love that.
We want to thank you guys for being on, and we will see you all on the next podcast of the Jew. Let me say that again. Geez, what the heck was that?
Well, you messed up. We're talking about messing up. So you had to do it once.
I have never messed up the ending.
You got a lot of pressure.
I'm being vulnerable now. Oh my gosh. Let me start that over again. Holy cow. I want to thank Mark and Mary for being on the podcast, and we'll see you all on the next Julie Gino podcast. Take care, everyone. Oh my gosh. Sorry about that, guys.